Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and I hope that wherever you are, you're enjoying the brisk, cool temperatures of fall. And I know that you're going to enjoy this next hour. We're going to have a special guest, Guy Finley. He's come out with a new book called The Seeker, The Search, The Sacred, Journey to the Greatness Within. Guy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
Now, you've been on my show before, and you always come up with such interesting topics. This one, which is called The Seeker, The Search, The Sacred, really involves, it's not a real big book, but
no.
It involves a lot of very thoughtful messages coming from many different applications.
Yes.
What gave you this perspective that you felt was different from what you have talked about before?
Many, many, actually more years than I care to mention. Many years ago, I had the great fortune, Donna, of meeting and then working with an illumined gentleman. I believe a true mystic, a true Christian saint, in the sense of his pronounced understanding. And he had written a book many years ago, back in the 60s or 70s, that was a collection of quotations from masters and saints, prophets, long ago. And it was assembled in such a way that you could read on a topic of something like integrity or love, kindness, compassion, various topics, and you'd read these individuals, their take on it. And I remember reading that way back then and having this impression that there was something more than met the eye with these quotations. And over the years, it began to formulate within me that all of these men and women down through the ages had really been telling the same exact story, only in their terms relative to their conditioning and their traditions. And more so, I realized that if one understood and met these ideas squarely, you could see that there's always and only been one seeker. That the divine dissatisfaction, I call it a divine dissatisfaction, that everyone feels this sort of hole in their soul, and they have since the beginning of time. And that sense of emptiness sets us out on a search. And all of us go out and go into these different relationships to discover who and what we are through them. And in the end, if you will, as we realize that all of these roads ultimately lead us back into some awareness of ourselves, then we come into this idea that there's been one seeker in, if you will, 1,000 different guises, one search in 100 million guises, and the sacred. It's all one story. And that's what this book really tries to convey to the reader, that we are seated, each and every one of us, with a longing to know an inherent greatness. We go out, we search for this greatness, and gradually we come to the point where we realize that what we're looking for is a conscious relationship with ourselves.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting that we're discussing this, because I just finished reviewing a piece of material this morning by a man in Italy, and his story about his journey and what he's gone through. And every one of us does have a journey of its own type.
Yes.
And every one of us must experience it in the modalities that our life path takes us through.
Yes.
I believe the man you said that was so influential in your thinking and your life was Vernon Howard.
Yes.
And that is something, you say he passed away in 1992. So when we have someone like that that comes into our life that makes such an impact that literally transforms our lives,
yes,
then we can never go back to what we were before. It's just not possible.
And no, it really isn't. And that's why, in this instance, you know, when we get right information that brightens our understanding of ourselves, it really changes not what we see, but the seer itself. It changes our nature. And that's what we're after, to be able to recognize that we are put into this world, and there's nothing wrong with pursuing the things that we do, because it is through these relationships, like I said, that we get introduced to parts of ourselves that we would never have a chance to know. But when we begin to collect the broader story, we see that our individual lives certainly have a unique story to them, but that we are each part of a much bigger story, and that bigger story is told to us through all of these experiences, if we can have the eyes to see the truth of that.
You say there's a three-in-one power. There are three words that are utilized: discrimination,
yes,
intention, and illumination.
Yes.
And I think the term discrimination has been very much misused.
Oh, yeah.
Because I do not know of a soul on this planet that doesn't discriminate. It can
right.
be anything from saying, I'm sorry, but turnips and I don't get along, to racial things. It can be all kinds of stuff. There's
yes.
always going to be discrimination. It's
yes.
never going to be eliminated, because it's part of what we utilize to develop a sense of discernment for a balanced center life, good, bad, or indifferent. It's there.
Yes, very, very true. The whole point of that, of those three words, they come after a story, is that we are given a great capacity to be able to discern, discriminate, if you will, make clear to ourselves what works and what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, blaming other people. We have a facility that is more than adequate to introduce us to the idea that we can blame till the cows come home, but it doesn't change the fact that there's something in us that gets us into these relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So the capacity to discriminate, to realize this works and this doesn't, when it comes to the choices we make, leads gradually to a new intention. And in the broadest sense of it, which is the way the story is leads into this idea, is that we are made to understand that our intention in life, moment to moment, can be no greater, no wiser than what we value. And that as we work and wake up a little bit and see that much of what we have valued in life, not that there was anything wrong when we set out to do it, but that it proved to be valueless, meaning it didn't change the sense of inadequacy, it didn't make us feel whole like we wanted to, and if it did, it was only temporary.
Mm-hmm.
So out of this discrimination comes a new intention, which is to understand first who and what I am before I go running after what who I am tells me I have to be happy. So mm-hmm. the arrow of attention gets turned around. And then as we begin the process of observing, watching ourselves, being properly mindful, if you will, then illumination follows. And of course, that illumination is in its end result an integration, and we become a happier, whole human being.
I find it so interesting, no matter where you go in the world, no matter what culture you encounter, no matter what class a person might be in, what economical level they might be in, or maybe they don't even have an economic level,
right,
that there are these experiences we choose to go through, and it seems like there is a continuity with each and every one of us on this planet to go through this to wake up. That's the way
yes.
I like to term it, to wake up. And this is something that your book, with what you have within its content, you have quotes, you have different things that have been favorites of yours that you're sort of passing along. And I think a book like yours, The Seeker, The Search, The Sacred, I think what it does, it enables someone to have something in their hand if they wanted to, or just have by the bedside,
Yeah.
Where they could just take a page or a little bit at a time and maybe chew on it.
Yeah.
And let it go through their own personal mental digestive system to say, what does this mean to me? What is it? And what I like about this guy is that you've taken it from all different types of environments and personalities. And I really think that that is so important. Too many times we try to just make it, it's either got to be this way or this way or this way, without recognizing that wisdom doesn't have a class.
That's
understanding
right.
does not know a gender. Insight doesn't care about age.
No.
Or where you might be in the universe.
That's right. That's right. And to the heart of the book is that every last one of us, regardless of race, religion, tradition, part of the world we live in, we each have, I call it the need to know this greatness, but we can call it, we all have a longing for love.
Mm-hmm.
We all have that longing. Now, I didn't put that longing in me. You didn't put it in Donna.
Mm-hmm.
And that longing for this love, for this unconditional greatness, it is what sends us off into the world looking for ways in which we can come into relationship with that which will reveal this love that sends us on the journey.
Mm-hmm.
So that...
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
So that we make this marvelous discovery that we're not alone. That the very thing that I'm looking for has sent me out looking for it. And if that's true, which it is, which the book proves, then what is there to be afraid of? Failure becomes a word that has no meaning, because everything that I am taken to meet serves to introduce me to that very celestial, timeless nature that sends me on the journey to begin with in order to discover that we are the same, we are one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is a very strong truth. When we come to the section on the search, because it is basically divided into these three areas,
yes,
you have this excerpt from the record, Sweet Dreams.
Yeah.
Made of this. Who am I
yeah.
to disagree? Travel the world in the seven seas. Everybody's looking for something.
Yeah.
And that's so true. And I'll never forget, many years ago, I was just a little girl, and I remember seeing a program where Red Buttons was portraying, and he's been gone for a lot of years now, but at the time he was playing this role, he was an older gentleman. And it was a scene in a small town, and he was renowned in his little community for being the world traveler. He had been the entertainer, and there was a younger person that came to him and said, oh, you're so fortunate, gee whiz, everything I've got in this little town, it's drab, it's mundane. And he was going on and on and on, as a young person often does.
Right.
And he looked at this young person, and for some reason these words registered in my very, very young mind. He said, everything you have, the world is right in your own backyard. And he said, I've been around the world. I've been everywhere. This is the character he was portraying. He said, I've been around the world, seemingly done everything, but I have found what was meaningful to me was right here in this hometown. And in my very young mind, I thought, that's an interesting statement, because whoever put the script together really was trying to give out some wisdom in a costuming of character, by the older trying to tell the younger you can go around the world and not really find what you have already within yourself right where you are.
Yeah.
And of course, as a mature woman today, I have a different understanding of that. But I think of how many different ways those that have had wisdom and insight have tried to communicate that to the newer generations coming along, because I don't know of any shortcuts. Do you? Do you guys?
No, I don't think there are any. No, and that's, you know, but part of the journey, you know, Donna, just as you stated it, is this gradual recognition. Number one, not only are there no shortcuts, But if what I really am interested in, meaning if what I really want in my heart of hearts is to know the truth, I have nowhere to go. So I don't need a shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
I need to understand the significance and the importance of being present in the moment, not just to the lessons that are coming my way, but to the fact that underneath that story is a greater story in which something, some intelligence, is creating for me the lessons that I need so that I have the revelation about myself in order to realize the lesson giver.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have a charming story in your third section of the book that you have titled As Above, So Below, and it involves a gray tree squirrel, a red fox, and a couple of others. Now, share that story, because it is absolutely priceless. And where did it come from?
I don't know where they come from, but the story was intended to convey something that we could speak about for 1,000 years and never really, encapsulate. A squirrel and a few other creatures get into an argument in the woods. And the argument is, who's the happiest of the creatures? And the squirrel says, I'm the happiest. The skunk says, I am. The crow says, no, I am. And in a book just before this one, before The Secret, The Search, The Sacred, I wrote a book called The Courage to Be Free, and I introduced a character named Solomon, a wise old owl, who was trying to help some eagles who had kind of lost their way with regards to their nature. And Solomon kind of interrupts the argument in the story in the Seeker book and says, no, 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 you're all wrong. The happiest amongst you is Abraham, this old tortoise. And why? And he said, because wherever Abraham goes, he takes his home with him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what we want. We want to know, I think, Donna, more than anything else, that those moments when life runs smack into us and we're suffering and we feel like we've lost something or someone, that we, some betrayal, what we want to know is in those moments when everything in us is piling on and saying through its pain, all this has been pointless, that life is against you, so forth and so on, to understand that life is never against itself. Life is never trying to tear us down. It's trying to teach us that the only reason we suffer in the moments we do is because we don't know who we are, and we have created for ourselves temporary homes that are subject to change. And that the changes are the invitation to recognize that these temporary identities that we've established for ourselves through our culture and our conditioning, our social striving, that they're meant to be revealed as inappropriate and temporary in nature, so that we can let go of the unhappiness that comes with the fear of protecting ourselves in favor of coming into true possession of ourselves through the relationship these moments present.
I think that when we can give ourselves some time and space to really reflect where we are in any given moment, I think that it allows us to ask ourselves, what is it that maybe we need to change within ourselves? What is it that we need to pay attention to? Because there are times in life where it gets pretty stinking.
Yeah.
And you may say, I am in a quagmire of muck, and I need to get out of this crap.
Right.
But you have to pay attention to what kind of crap you're standing in.
Yes.
Now, that may sound a little crude, but I mean, really, you do.
How you got there. See, we have a tendency, a part of us, is very quick to explain or otherwise justify our pain to ourselves. And the purpose of my work and the new book is to bring the person into a recognition that, look, this event that runs contrary to my wishes, it feels like a confrontation. But in truth, it's an invitation. And the invitation is to come wide awake in that very moment and to realize that all right, I did the best I can do up until this point. In fact, if I'm willing to admit it, I got here by my best efforts. And if I'm standing in a pile of gunk, and it's by my best efforts, regardless how I will, you know, explain the situation away to myself, then that doesn't mean that I am a pile of gunk. It means that my nature as it was has brought me here, and now it's time to let go, to accept the invitation born of this revelation. Donna, I like to say that events, that lessons write in on the back of events. In other words, each event is an invitation, a revelation of who and what I am up until that moment.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm willing to see that who and what I am up until this moment is sitting here and resisting the event, and then recognize a key idea in the book, which is simply that resistance is incapable of learning anything. Resistance is a secret form of identification. If the listeners just write down one thing from our conversation, when we resist something, it's because we are identifying with it, not separating ourselves from it the way we believe we are when we try to push something away. We're actually drawing it closer to ourselves. If I can get past that, then I can begin to recognize, all right, I have not come as far as it's possible for me to go, but who I am, this is presently what I have brought to myself. Now I need to let go and discover something new.
When you use the term resistance, it brought into mind the martial arts. That's one of the lessons that they will teach, is don't resist, flow, move.
Yes, yes.
Let your energy work in such a way that you literally can take the agitation and, if you will, the resistance out of whoever might be the adversary.
Or actually use their energy.
Yes. And
you know, it's actually scriptural. Christ said, resist not evil. And the word resist in the Aramaic means do not oppose what opposes you. This is the great lesson when it comes to trying to deal with our fears and worries, because without being conscious of it, a part of us jumps up and immediately resists the condition that it has perceived as being true. And the perception of the moment is the product of a mind asleep to itself. It's not the actual event. So we wind up resisting our own imagination.
It's a fascinating perspective. You have a quote in your book, among many, from all over the world, one by Henry David Thoreau that I really liked. In eternity, there's indeed something true and sublime, but all these times and places and occasions are now and here. God himself culminates in the present moment and will never be more divine in the lapse of all the ages. Time is but a stream I go a-fishing in. I drink at it, but when I drink, I see the sandy bottom and detect how shallow it is. Its thin current slides away, but eternity remains. And I thought that those words, and you've got so many other wonderful bits of wisdom, like Helen Keller, everything has its wonders, even darkness and silence. And I learn, whatever state I may be in, therein, to be content. There are so many that you have in here, again, from people from all different cultures all around the world. What's your favorite one, Guy? Do you have one?
You know, I wouldn't know what it would be, because you know it's like a kid in a candy store. Every one you read tastes the best.
Mm-hmm.
To me, if you know, somehow all of these quotations, and just to clarify this, I do, in each of the sections, the seeker section, the search the section, and the sacred section, I present these chronological quotations from all the past masters and saints, so that one is intended to get the impression, and then all of the essays are meant to clarify the impression, that really this is one voice.
Mm-hmm.
One voice. Telling one story for one purpose. That's the whole meaning. And I don't know, Don, have you, if, onejourney.net. Have you seen the new video that we put up on our new website?
No, I got the email from you, but no, I have not seen
it. Oh, please, Donna, I'm begging you. Go to onejourney.net. Everybody, O-N-E-J-O-U-R-N-E-Y, one word, onejourney.net. There's a 3.5-minute video montage on the opening of this new website that tells the whole story that you and I are talking about in, with beautiful music and images. Do take a look at it, Donna. I know you'll love that.
Well, I'm sure I will. Now, quickly, I know we've got a few minutes left. I would love for you to share this story about the little being and Solomon.
Again, there's a story where this small creature is crying in the woods, and Solomon comes upon it and says, "Why are you crying?" And the creature says, I can't seem to find myself. I lose these things. I can't make... Nothing stays, and he says, "Well, do you mind telling me, little creature, you know, what's your name?" And the creature says, little being says, "Well, my name is Someone." And Solomon said, "Where did you get the name Someone from?" And the little creature goes on to say, "Well, I met some friendly crows in the forest." And, of course, the allusion in the story is relative to the parable of the sower, where the birds come and steal the message away. And Solomon says, "Listen, little one, no wonder you're so unhappy. Your name isn't Someone, it's Everyone."
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we need to learn, is that we have something in us that immediately creates a distinction, a sense of self, separate than the moment, born out of resisting it because it doesn't meet our expectations, or the judgment of others because they won't confirm the image that we have of ourselves and who we are. The life that has given us this great story, it truly is everyone. It is a universal love that can be discovered within ourselves individually. And when we know this about ourselves, then all of this sense of fear and worry and doubt disappears.
You have a quote that I think complements that, and it's, "The river has become one with the sea." No, the river does not have all the qualities of the sea, but it is, nonetheless, in the sea.
Yes.
And that is referenced, and that was by Jean Guyon. I really think that it's really a very strong piece of wisdom when we realize the interconnection we have with everything and everyone. And this is just such a phenomenal, what do I want to say, universal sampler, just this little piece of Earth that we are on, which is big to us, but in the universal size of things, it's just a little tiny something out there in the middle of everything else. And when we look at that, we realize that you cannot just assume that your world is all that there is, because there's this infrastructure that is unbelievably phenomenal.
Yes, you've really nailed it, Donna. You've nailed it, because this book, The Secret, The Search, The Sacred, it is intended to help the reader remember the truth of themselves. If we can just get that much, by the way, the video, again, it's to stir this lost memory, this remembrance that, God, I know the truth of that, and I've always known the truth of that. And why? Because that truth has always been right there within me, just waiting for me to wake up to it and realize my relationship with that timeless, loving intelligence.
Mm-hmm. I think that Albert Einstein said it well, and you have it right in the intro of your book. "Small is the number of people who see with their eyes and think with their mind." And it really is a big step forward when individuals take the time to really think. We're living in a period of tremendous turmoil. If you listen to the media, my goodness, everything's going, you know, where in a handbasket pretty quickly. But if you look back in history, this isn't the first time, and it's probably not going to be the last. So it's, where do we put our thinking? Where do we put our energy? Where are we going to have our intention? And what are our actions going to be? And when you have that kind of mindfulness, you may be one of those persons, just like a butterfly, whose wings, when they're flapped, influences the currents of air around the globe. There is so much that we can do. One person can make such a difference.
Indeed.
And I see it every day. I look at it, and I see it in effect in nature on multiple levels. And I really think your book, The Seeker, The Search, The Sacred, brings forth a different aspect of thought that people can use to help them recognize that their minds belong to them and that as human beings they have the right of individuality. And in discovering that individuality, they realize how they can harmonize with everything that's around them, and they won't have to have the resistance. They can be at peace within themselves and within the world, even with its turmoil, recognizing that they do make a difference.
Yeah. In fact, the clearer we can be about the fact of our authentic individuality, the easier it is for us to harmonize with everyone. It seems like a paradox, but the greater the understanding of who and what I really am, the more I allow you to be who and what you are, because it all serves the great purpose of developing this understanding, this self-wisdom.
Well, Guy, as always, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Your book, The Seeker, The Search, The Sacred, is wonderful. You've got a new website, onejourney.net. That's O-N-E, journey.net. And those of you listening, you can watch a beautiful video. And, Guy, thanks so much for being with me today.
I thank you, Donna. And as you said, if we could just go look at the video and share it with our friends, I promise you it's possible we can help the world remember that we're not meant to be teetering like this with fear, but rather standing collectively in a new freedom, and I invite everyone to participate.
Thank you, Guy. Guy
Fenway,
The Seeker, The Search, The Sacred. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna, and my goodness, we've got a wonderful lineup of people this week. I want to let you know, tomorrow we're talking about communicating with animals. Joan Marquette is going to be my guest. She is a delight. And also we're going to be talking about a man who is historically considered the person that started the environmental movement, people making people aware of what they need to do. Thomas Berry, Dreamer of the Earth, is going to be the subject matter. Alan Combs is going to be our guest. And then on Thursday, we're going to be talking with Diva Haley. Sacred Alchemy will be playing some of her music. And then on Friday, we're going to be discussing Black Genesis. Thomas Brophy and Robert Boval have put this together. They're both historians, and this is all about Egypt. So we have got a very, very interesting lineup. And if ever you want to find out who's coming up on the shows, be sure to check out here on BBS all of the listings. You can get show information. There's brief write-up for you, so all of that is available to you. Hey, telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me today, feel free to do that. Call 888-627-6000. 888-627-6008. That is 888-627-6008. Okay, I wanted to share with you something that you might have heard about. This is an abbreviation about the story of the Philadelphia experience. Now, it's experiment. That was an experience for a lot of people, some of it not so good. Science always has had a fascination with the what-ifs. Curiosity, well, it's something that's very good. And when you think of Gene Roddenberry and all of the different shows that he put together with Star Trek, and you remember the Klingons and their cloak of invisibility. Well, acquiring that cloak of invisibility has been a desire by people forever. Yes, even some of the old stories that go back to King Arthur and the fantasies and the fables, the cloak of invisibility in one way or another, in one form or another, has always been an intriguing concept to people because they've looked at it frequently as a way of being able to achieve, one, the impossible, two, and have a positioning against their enemies, perceived or real. Well, in 1943, on October the 28th, there was a naval yard in Philadelphia where there was a brilliant flash of blue electricity that circled a particular vessel. It was called the USS Eldridge. It was a destroyer escort 173. Now, this whole destroyer, and if you've ever been around a destroyer, you know how massive they are. It began to fade from sight. Seconds later, it appeared some distance away in Norfolk, Virginia, for several minutes before, right in front of a lot of people, they actually saw it materialize. And then it returned to the original naval yard. Now, the sad side of this is that the sailors that were on board this ship, they ended up extremely ill. Some of them went insane, or they were missing. And five men were said to have been fused inside the ship's structure. Now, what was going on? Well, apparently, there was some testing of an electromagnetic field. It involved electromagnetic field generators as part of a search for radar and possibly optical invisibility. It was believed that if you could cloak the ship with an immense magnetic field, the light and radar waves would be refracted around the vessel the way heat waves are over a highway, and how those can create a mirage. We've all seen that. However, there was a scientist, and the rumors were flying after this particular episode. His name was Dr. Franklin Reno. They say that he was the one that had successfully applied Einstein's unified field theory by connecting the field of gravity with the field of electromagnetism, causing teleportation. Yes, something right out of Star Trek. Well, it had been going on long before Star Trek came around. Now, the experiment apparently had begun 5 months before October the 28th, 1943. Carlos Allende, who was a crewman aboard the Andrew Firth, watched events unfold from the safety of his own ship. He eventually wrote to a Dr. Morris Jessup, who was an author of a popular book on UFOs, and he told the doctor what he had seen. He said that in July 1943, the experimental generators were turned on, and a greenish fog cloaked the destroyer, the Eldridge, concealing it from view. Now, the fog disappeared rather quickly. When that happened, the ship went with it. 15 minutes later, when the generators were shut off, both the fog and the vessel reappeared, and the entire crew was extremely disoriented. Now, a curious side to this story is that in 1959, Dr. Jessup was discovered dead in his car. They said it was an apparent suicide of carbon monoxide poisoning. And to this day, apparently the U.S. Navy still denies that this Philadelphia experiment ever happened. Fascinating story. Fascinating stuff. I'll tell you, lots of times people that write science fiction, you think of H.G. Wells, Jules Verne. There are so many people that seem to go into what I call like a time warp. And they enter into this mind zone that doesn't know any time. And they write out their stories. And what's fascinating is there have been many people that have written stories, sometimes in fabricated formats, that have ended up years later actually happening. And when I think of the people that worked with Gene Roddenberry, one of whom I interviewed on my show, oh, I'd say about 7 years ago, he was a young physicist that worked with one of the top physicists in the world. And this young man was exposed to areas of science and research that most of us never even hear about, and he ended up becoming one of the writers for Gene Roddenberry. And so a lot of what he had been exposed to and a lot of what he knew was incorporated through the writing of the scripts into the programs that millions and millions of people around the globe are still enthralled with. Ah, yes. Remember, everything starts with a thought. And concepts and ideas, time doesn't know anything about that. It's putting them into application, though, that really makes a difference. How do you make something work and work well? Have you ever known of people that have come up with ideas that were way ahead of their time? I have. I've known people that were 20 years or even more ahead in their perceptions of what they wanted to do, what they wanted to achieve. I can remember being told that years ago by a friend of mine. She said, Donna, you're too far ahead in your thinking. It's not time for certain things yet. And many years later, she was proven to be true. She could understand what my thoughts and perceptions were, but she said, the mechanics just aren't available for you to utilize right now. Fascinatingly, the mechanics have become available, and it is just an amazing thing. You think of how today we're able to do programming that goes around the planet instantaneously. People with cameras able to send photographs of whatever they're interested in sending in. It can be in a location in seconds. We have a capacity for communication that has created a speeding up on so many levels of life. And it really is a fascinating phenomenon. And when you're around little kids, you'll find that those little kids, most of them, they say, yeah, that's just the way it is. It doesn't bother them at all. But for any of us who are older, who have had to evolve through this, we sense it. We sense that speed. But I'll have to tell you something. I meet a lot of people, younger people, that say the same thing. They say, I can't believe how fast things seem to be going. It's amazing to me. Well, I'll tell you what. You can feel sort of overwhelmed when you go through that, but if you'll just take time to be quiet, be out in nature, give yourself an hour a day, give yourself time, and say, no matter what's going on, I'm going to be able to get the things done. You're going to be surprised at how smoothly everything falls into a rhythm and into place in its own way. It really is a fascinating pattern. I observed it when I was in my teens, in my late teens, but like so many people, many times I fought against it. We all do that. But remember, you're your own best friend, so treat yourself kindly. This is Donna Sebo. When we come back, I want to give you some information on, what are some secrets of millionaires? What do you think success is? We'll talk about that. And maybe if I have some time, I'll share a recipe with you. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. Donna Sebo here. Don't go away. We'll be back. I'd love to chat with you. 888-627-6008. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. If you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and just relax. Let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. The number to call in to is 888-627-6008. What are eight secrets that millionaires have in common with each other? Well, there's a woman by the name of Linda Christensen. And she said, in researching this, and she spent a lot of time doing interviews and talking to people of tremendous wealth, and these are the ones that earned it. We're not talking about somebody that's inherited granddaddy's fortune. No, we're talking about people that have gone from the ground up. What is it that they had in common? And these were particular points that she found were consistently constant in her conversations. The first point was, make sure whatever you do is your dream. Whatever it is that you really, really love, find a way of spending time with what you absolutely love. I think of a gal who was a phenomenal artist. Oh, she was incredible. Her detail, everything that what she did with her paintings, breathtakingly beautiful. She was starving to death. And she said, This is just, I guess, the starving artist thing, and I guess I'll have to go through this, and then one day I may be discovered. This is the typical attitude of a lot of artists. Anyway, that's what they're indoctrinated with. So she said this is the way it was. Well, one day a friend came over to her house and was very agitated, and they were having cookies and tea, and she said, what are you so upset over? She said, oh, my little girl, I just don't have any money. I want a special birthday cake. I really want to have a very special birthday for her. She was, I guess, like 5-6 years old. And so this artist said to her friend, she said, oh, why don't you let me make the cake? She said, would you really? That'd be awesome. So she decides she's going to decorate a cake. Well, her particular favorite item in art was flowers. She absolutely was passionate about flowers and was magnificent in painting them. Well, she tried a different application. She started making these flowers out of frosting, and she was having such a good time. And this was for a child, so she made an exaggeration of certain flowers, and she knew the little girl's favorite colors and some of the characters that she liked. So she ends up making this phenomenal birthday cake for this 5 or 6 year old child. She takes it into the party because it was a surprise, and not only was the little girl just squealing over this beautiful cake, But all the moms with their children were going, wow, look at what you did. Well, the next thing that this artist knew is that she was being asked to make birthday cakes. I'm not kidding. The people, the mothers that had seen what she had done for this one little girl said, would you make one for my little boy? Would you do one for my little girl? And so she started doing cakes. Now, in the meantime, she was still doing her artwork, still doing her painting, still going through the starving artist pattern. And she started finding she didn't have so much time for her painting because she was baking these cakes and designing these wonderful flowers on the cake. And by golly, people said, let us pay you for it. And she said, well, I guess, okay. And the long story short, after a few years, she ends up opening up a bakery. And all she did was make these spectacular flowers. She now gets $10,000 plus a cake. And her artwork is breathtakingly gorgeous. Who'd ever want to cut into one of these cakes? I probably wouldn't want to do it. But she found someone that could make the cakes for her, make them delicious cakes, and then she did all the embellishments. She's happy. She's independently wealthy on her own level. And she found that her art could be expressed in a different way. She said, a million years I would have never thought of making flowers for a cake. But that's how I discovered what I could do. The other thing that Lisa said is, don't call it a goal. Don't worry about a goal. Be what you want to be. You want to have anticipated expectancy. Emotion is motion. Now think about that. When you're really emotional about something, and I'm not talking about hysterical hysteria here, I'm talking about this is something, I'm going to do it, I just love it, and you go about the action of involving yourself in what you love. It works. You have to be committed. You've got to live it. You've got to work it. You have to be willing to educate yourself. You have to be willing to practice. If you want to become a cellist, you may have natural ability, but nobody's going to think you're exceptional unless you practice, 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 and put yourself in the environment where you're with what you consider the very best. You always do it because you love to do it. It's something that fills your soul. And then use the tools around you. Whatever you have in your environment right now, use it. Maybe it's a public library. Maybe it's volunteering at an animal shelter. Whatever your passion is, use the tools that are around you. Sometimes the most valuable is a piece of paper and a pen. Know and accept your outcome and plan it. What do you want? Are you willing to work to get it? How do you see yourself? How do you see your life being? Do you want to set a time frame to reach it? Or you just want to go with the flow? Why is it that you want it? Is it because it really is something that speaks to your very heart, your very spirit? Or is it because mom or dad or Aunt Lucy or somebody else said this is what you should do? See, learning to be true to your own spirit is really, really hard. Who can you go to? Who's going to help you? How can you make something happen? How can you put yourself out there? And then review, plan, and commit on a daily basis is point number six. You need to be aware. You have to keep in mind the dream. Because I'll tell you, sometimes that dream is fulfilled in ways and manners you could never imagine. Do you know what? Realize that you're a success. Tell yourself you have succeeded. And more than anything else, share with others your commitment, your passion that you have, the love of what you do. Because it really does make a difference. Now, you also have to demonstrate. There's the saying, talk is cheap, and that is so true. But it's the action and demonstration that makes a difference. I know of a young man. He's all of 17 years of age. From the time he was 10 years old, he's been involved with music. He started out with guitar, now is playing the viola, got involved in a rock and roll group, went to a school for a while. His family was very supportive of him. Someone heard him play, very famous person, associated with rock and roll, and said, you know, I'd like for you to come and be a part of this sort of chamber group I've put together for rock and roll. We don't have someone playing the viola. Yes, the young man graduated from the guitar to the viola. Out of the blue. They saw him playing and practicing and performing. And the man said, "You're good. I'd like you to be a part of the team." Life is a fascinating experience. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And it's so important for you to remember that, because you can be exceptional just in being who you are right now at this moment. Realize that life is a gift. And you're the one that can untie the ribbon and open it up and reveal the mystery and wonderment and beauty of it all to yourself. Don't be afraid to invest in yourself. That's the best thing you can do for you. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.